Welcome, action fans, and thanks for joining us for the second season of All 90s Action All the Time. I'm one of your hosts, Scott Murphy, and on this season of the pod, we will be looking at the 90s films of Sylvester Stallone. And joining me on this sly journey, we have Bloodhound Picks co-host Craig Draheim back from his recovery from the Steven Seagal season after skipping last week's rapid fire record. Well, it was last week for us is actually about 4 weeks for you, the listener. So there you go. So welcome again, Craig.
Thank you for having me. And I want it to be known, Scott, that I'm not your robot.
That is a reference. Well, if you've seen this movie already, which you probably have, that is a reference that you will definitely pick up on and something we will definitely talk about later. Now, before we get started, I need to put a qualifier on this season that we will not be covering all of Sylvester Stallone's films from the 90s. No. Just his action films. So, we will not be covering Oscar, Ants, or his cameos in an Alan Smithy film, Burn Hollywood Burn, and The Good Life. So none of them. We will, however, be covering Copland, which is kind of a cheat, but we wanted to talk about it, and it's our podcast, damn it, so we're going to talk about it.
And it's one of Stallone's best roles, in my opinion. It's
one of his best acting performances. So we want to talk about that. We want to celebrate that because there will be occasional celebration. Obviously, there will be celebration of Sylvester Stallone throughout this season, but there will also be movies that we'll struggle through, which is kind of what's going to happen today, guys. But but buckle in anyway, buckle in. Mind you, we did nearly get a fun start to this season. We came so close. But sadly, alas, Tango and Cash was released on December the 22nd, 1989. We came within 2 weeks, Craig.
Oh, I know.
God damn it. But no, instead, we are lumbered with this movie, which most critics and most fans of the Rocky franchise believe it to be the worst entry. Anyway, I, as always, want to give you some details on the movie. So, Rocky V came out on November 16th, 1990, and was directed by John G. Avildsen, who was the director of the original Rocky picture, and his other notable credits include the fact that he directed the first three Karate Kid pictures. And as always, the film was written by Sylvester Stallone himself. Critically, the film has a 31% on Rotten Tomatoes, based on 36 reviews, 55 on Metacritic, which seems slightly generous, based on 16 reviews, 5.3 out of 10 on IMDb, and a 2.3 on Letterboxd. So this, I wanted to mention as well before we kind of get into the plot of the movie, you do wonder, and Sylvester Stallone has kind of said himself that he made this movie out of greed. That is a quote from Sylvester Stallone. And it does seem like maybe he was kind of looking for a hit, because in the in-between time, so Rocky IV came out in 1985. This movie came out, obviously, 5 years later. And in between that, he had had, like, a couple of big flops. Like, 1987's Over the Top flopped hard. And the previous year's Lock Up was also a pretty big flop. And Rambo 3 as well in 1987 also kind of, it wasn't a flop, but it did kind of underperform compared to the previous installments and compared to some of his bigger hits. In fact, probably the biggest success of this kind of little 5 year stretch was Cobra, because it made something like, I'm not sure. It made multiple times its budget anyway. It was like, I think it was like 160 million off a 25 million budget or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Even Tango and Cash, actually, it was 120 million off a 52 million budget, which again is obviously not a failure, but given the kind of old adage about, you know, for a film to go into profit, it has to be like kind of double the budget, because, you know, they don't announce like what the advertising budget and all that's going to be. So that's what they usually say. So it wasn't that big, but it was a big hit when it came out on VHS and has made loads of money since. So yes, it wasn't the strongest kind of period of Sylvester Stallone's career after he'd kind of reached his kind of zenith in 1985 when he released both Rambo 2 and Rocky 4 in the same year. So yeah, I just thought it was a kind of interesting thing of maybe that's why he kind of decided to make this.
It really feels like that watching it. And I know we've talked a lot beforehand, and as much as I loved Sylvester Stallone as a kid and watching his movies, surprisingly, like I only have seen the first Rocky and then I watched Creed that came out more recently. But yeah, all the other Rockies I hadn't seen and still haven't up until this point of watching Rocky 5. But yeah, even watching it, it definitely felt like a cash-in. Even by the people acting, you can kind of feel that a lot too.
Yes. That is part of the problem in the movie. We will get into, as always, listeners, we're going to talk about the plot of the movie. So, you know, big spoiler alert ahead in all block caps. You know, if you've not seen the movie, maybe you want to check it out, come back, listen to this. Or maybe you just want to listen to this and save yourself some time. but it's watch it as part of the series. But anyway, yeah, it does. I think it is part of the problem of the movie, really, that so many of the cast seem quite disinterested, that everybody seems either kind of low-key or like, you know, like Burt Young as Polly, who's usually an entertaining presence, seems kind of like disengaged. Mm-hmm. Talia Shire, who, as I mentioned in a kind of previous conversation we had, like messaging back and forth about this movie, that like Talia Shire as Adrian, she was also filming Godfather Part 3 at the same time, is flying over to Rome, is flying LA, Philadelphia, Rome, you know, all this kind of back and forth. And she looks very tired. She looks visibly tired throughout the movie, and she gives, frankly, a weird performance where she is either really underacting or really overacting, and doesn't hit a middle ground throughout the movie. Either she's kind of saying lines like kind of, Rocky, I don't think you should do that, or she's just being like, Rocky, oh, you're losing us, you know, like it's just either one extreme or the other. There's no in between. It's just a really schizophrenic performance throughout the movie.
Well, and that's because going from seeing the first Rocky and her performance in that, and I'm not sure, obviously, even though I know what happens throughout 2, 3, and 4 fairly well, but not knowing how her performance handles, I guess, in those other films, you know, going just off of that first movie and then seeing this, like, what character is she? Because I don't remember this from the first one.
I mean, like all the characters, they become slightly more melodramatic as the films go on, but she still makes sense as a character. She doesn't make sense as a character in this movie. Like, I think is part of the problem. She still makes sense as a character in the other movies. Yeah. So, yes. And then there's Sylvester Stallone himself, who, yeah, as we'll get to very soon as we discuss the start of the movie, his performance is, he doesn't look particularly interested. And Rocky in this movie is, like, obviously, you know, when Sylvester Stallone is playing Rocky, obviously he does a Rocky voice, you know, like that. But which is sometimes slightly incomprehensible. But in this movie, like, I mean, generally I can understand, you know, in other Rocky movies, generally I can understand them, even if it is, you know, doing that. But he really kind of hams that up to the point where some of his dialogue is completely incomprehensible.
Yeah.
It really is just...
Well, and it almost feels like, it's been a few years since I've seen the original, but it feels, and there's kind of a part to it as well that is brought in at the beginning that we'll get into and then lost throughout most of it about brain damage, but it feels like they really tried to make him, I don't know, he just loses that grounding and becomes like a character of like more dopey in a way, I want to say. I don't know how to explain it.
I think we'll talk about that more kind of throughout the movie because there is several instances where, yeah, he becomes more caricatured and, yeah, in a kind of really silly way. But we'll get on to, like, you know, what happens in the movie. So possibly one of the most exciting things to happen in Rocky V is the opening movie, which is the edited highlights of the end of Rocky IV. Is what we get at the start of Rocky V, which is, unfortunately, it kind of edits out, you know, some of the most entertaining kind of bits, you know, like when Dolph Lundgren, who's playing Ivan Drago, when he's being talked to by his trainers and stuff in the corner and stuff like that. And is, you know, he's kind of, at first he's kind of dead confident. And then as Rocky starts to turn the tide, he's like, he's made of iron, you know, like it's very entertaining. And then like, Sylvester Stallone gives like a very entertaining speech at the end of the fight that we also don't see, but we do see him, win the fight. But then after that, and that takes up like the first like 10 minutes of the movie or something.
It goes on. It feels long. It feels like, oh, so I'm just going to watch this whole fourth.
Yeah.
One now.
You're just going to watch the end of Rocky IV. We've got the footage. We're going to recycle it. It's going to be one of the most exciting things you see. So, you know, enjoy. But anyway, then we get the aftermath of that fight. And what do we see in the aftermath?
We see Rocky shaking. And well, at first he's in the shower and his, the coach is telling him, or one of his coaches is telling him that, you know, how great he did. And then he pretty much says, please go get Adrian. And Adrian comes in and, you know, Rocky is shaking and he's talking about how Mick was saying at some point that a fighter can be broken, and he feels broke and he's like shivering and he's just wants to go home. And then Adrian is kind of holding him, but also seems a little distant, especially, I don't know, for me, I'm not in that position where my partner is a boxer, but I feel like I'd feel more worried about somebody who just took all those blows and then, you know, is now shaking and saying that something feels off, but that's just me.
Yeah, for sure. And this is kind of one of the many instances in the movie where something is presented as if we should take it seriously and presented as like a big emotional moment. And like, if the Rocky, you know, if nothing else, the Rocky movies are all about kind of emotion and like you buy into it, even like some of the silly stuff you buy into. But here it's made to feel kind of silly. Like, you know, your heart should go out to him. You know, he's obviously, he feels like he's on the brink of death, that he's, you know, a part of his soul has been broken, you know, but it just comes off as kind of, you know, when he's reading out that line where he's saying, I just want to go home. It just comes off as so hammy. It just feels silly rather than this kind of what it should be, of like this kind of emotional moment of like, oh God, you know, this fighter is on his last legs, you know, this is, he's done, you know, he's had his time.
Which would have been, in my opinion, we talked about this beforehand, a more interesting movie if they just focused on that. But then, yeah, as we will go on, that whole thing just kind of gets dropped a little. It's like there occasionally when they need it to be, but then it's not.
But then it's just ignored. But anyway, he comes back from Russia, hailed the all-conquering hero, and we get our first look at Rocky Jr., who is played by Sylvester Stallone's eldest son, Sage Stallone. And the kind of hilarious thing about this is, you know, if you've watched the Rocky films, which I know you haven't, Craig,
yep.
That so there has been 5 years between the Rocky films. And so in Rocky IV, his son was about 9. And in this movie, his son's about 30, you know, he's about 5 years older, which is, he's played by a different actor. Sage Stallone didn't play him in Rocky IV. But, so in terms of the span of like the time that's actually passed in real life makes sense. In terms of the span of what time has passed in the film, cause this starts the day after Rocky IV, basically makes no sense at all.
No. Well, it even with plot elements that pop up soon, which I know we'll get to some other stuff before then, but it seems like they were in Russia for years. I mean, the way they talk about it, like with their money and stuff like that, it makes it seem like they're in Russia for a long time with this fight instead of, you know, whatever the amount of time it actually was.
Yeah, it wasn't that long. It was just like a training camp. So it was like,
yeah, you know,
like a few months have gone by.
Yeah. That's, you know, what I was guessing.
Like,
yeah.
It's been like, you know, like 8 weeks have gone by or something, you know, this does a training camp, you know, yeah. he wasn't there for like until the fall of communism or whatever, you know, like,
yeah.
The other thing about this episode that we've got to talk about is like we've got to get sad. There's going to be a few kind of times where, you know, bring up things, you know, like, because a lot of the people who have made this movie are no longer with us. John G. Avildsen, he passed away in 2017, aged 81, I believe. And sadly, very sadly, Sage Stallone passed away in 2012 at the age of only 36, due to a heart attack brought on by atherosclerosis, which is kind of a heart abnormality or something like that. Obviously very sad. Unfortunately, not the only person who suffered a tragic death on this film. We need to move on. Do you want to talk about the press conference and what happened in press conference?
So after kind of the reunion and the band is playing and everybody's excited and, you know, he's joking with his son, and even his son after a bit starts to say his dad is acting a little weird, again, foreshadowing for something that never really comes to fruition. But they go to this press conference where initially it was just supposed to be Rocky talking about the fight and so on. And then a promoter comes up with his new fighter who wants to instantly challenge Rocky for the world championship title belt. And, you know, obviously Rocky hasn't told anybody about the issue or that he's been facing with the shaking, and that then Adrian then kind of references that, well, he's going into retirement, and instead what the media kind of just goes at him saying, well, you got to answer the question, are you going to fight or not? And he just kind of deflects until the point where they leave and they wave goodbye to the press and all that. But that promoter really wants to have Rocky fight because it's a big meal ticket.
Yes. And that promoter, whose name in the film is George Washington Duke, and it's played by Richard Gant, who we've previously seen in The Glimmer Man.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we all remember that. And he is super modeled on Don King. If you know anything about boxing, this guy is, I mean, Don King is something of a cartoonish figure himself, but this is like an even more cartoon version of Don King, if you can believe that.
Yeah. Oh, and then that's actually something that's funny because, you know, I've had this fascination with boxing. I started watching real boxing, mm-hmm. going off of the opening fight that you kind of see the flashbacks of the number 4. And then even some of the fights within this, like, man, this is nowhere nothing like what I've been watching.
Like, oh, no, no, Rocky, no, Rocky movies don't have any sort of realistic portrayal of boxing. No, they're kind of fake. I mean, the closest it comes to a realistic depiction of boxing is the sixth one, Rocky Balboa. I've not seen the two Creed movies, but in Rocky Balboa, they seem to try and make it a little more realistic. But yes, like in the Rocky franchise up to this point, nobody in boxing apparently has a defense of any sort. And they're all just winging punches, like leaving themselves wide open. Like, yeah, it's not, no, don't try and compare it to real boxing in any way.
Doing wrestling moves, apparently.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Yes, you know, you just get separated for that, and nobody gets disqualified for bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, like, we'll just do like a back suplex. You know, like, it's that kind of thing that happens in the Rocky IV fight that you see at the start of this movie and at the end of actual Rocky IV. You know, like that. That doesn't generally happen, but no, all the fights in Rocky movies, none of them are particularly realistic in that way. Like, because like, yes, they're all just like chin up, winging punches left and right. You know, the kind of whole kind of footwork and, any sort of like head movement or any sort of like, proper, like, you know, putting your guard up kind of thing. Like it just doesn't happen. I suppose it looks more cinematic, but yeah. It just doesn't happen. Also, there is some real boxers in the movie though. Like, cause the guy who is being promoted by George Washington Duke, Union Kane, is played by Michael Anthony Williams, who was a real boxer. And there is another real boxer in the movie that we will talk about soon. But Michael Anthony Williams, he might have been an all right boxer. Don't really know his record, but he, terrible actor.
Yeah.
just says all his lines like he's directly reading them off the camera. It's
and they're very few too, so that's how much of an impact of an actor he makes, is that he only has probably like three lines that are repeated twice maybe, and they're
he's only in like a couple of scenes. Yeah, but anyway, we need to get rolling on with the rest of the movie. I did want to talk about the scene where they get back to the house and you know, Sage Stallone playing Rocky Jr. is talking to Polly about, like, it looks like, you know, Dad's looking a bit, you know, he notices he's acting a bit weird, you know. And then Polly's kind of reassuring, no, he's not acting weird. But the thing I really want to mention about this scene, because it's not really worth mentioning otherwise, was Rocky says one of the most inappropriate things you would say in front of your own child.
Yeah.
Like, because I needed to write the line down, because I was like, really? He says to Adrian that he wants to violate her like a parking meter. And I was like, one, as chattel blinds go, where did you pull that one out from? And two, like, would you really say that in front of your, like, 13-year-old son?
Well, and that's where I think, like, it gets into this whole idea that he's, you know, there's might be some brain damage from him getting beaten, and it feels like, oh, they're going to go this route. And, you know, the son is talking about that his dad is acting funny. So maybe they can really expand upon this. But yeah, it's just another one of those that, because they don't, it is brought up. It brings it out even more of just how inappropriate and how, off it is.
But then again, maybe that's just the way Rocky and his son kind of bond, because, you know, just after that, we get Rocky finding a picture of Rocky Jr. drawing of his French teacher with massive boobs, and they have a good old laugh about that.
But
and I love the line he gives, Sylvester Stallone gives, where he's like, he puts the picture back of the you know, this drawing of the massive boobs, and he was like, oh, you know, don't show your mother. She doesn't really understand French.
Yeah. Well, and it goes to this whole heartfelt moment too of, oh, it's supposed to be, where,
yeah, supposed to be.
While he's in the press conference, he talks about the love he has for his son. It was like he was given a, he was born again when his son came around. And so they have like this moment that's supposed to be sentimental of like him telling him his son how much his son means to him and that, you know, and what defining, I guess, what he already said, which I felt like was pretty easy to identify. Mm. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, it's supposed to set up, I feel like, this father-son relationship, which I know they expand upon kind of in Rocky Balboa.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah. Some of the moments kind of work. And like, I did watch an interview from Sylvester Stallone at the time and kind of, you know, it seems like some of it was kind of taken from real life of like, you know, in the scenes of like Sage's, you know, just bringing out that frustration of like the fact that Sylvester Stallone generally was away a lot of the time, you know, making films. And so they kind of drew from real life and in those kind of interactions a little bit, or that's what he was saying in interviews in 1990 anyway.
Okay. I mean, yeah, it's ripe with that kind of emotion, but as we'll get in and as we've already mentioned many times, it just doesn't follow through, I feel.
No. No, and it's just like, yeah, you want kind of more of that of like, you know, because there, it feels like there's stuff there and some of it is quite touching, but then some of it feels forced and some of it is just badly written and feels kind of hammy and silly. But anyway, talking about hammy and silly, here's one of the big questions of the movie. Now, you've not watched the Rocky franchise, but you have seen the first Rocky film, right?
Yes.
So you have some awareness of the character and what type of character Polly is. Correct?
Yes.
Now, I know. Would you trust Polly with your money?
Well, that's what I think is funny because, so no, I wouldn't.
Big capital no is the answer to this question. When
watching this one and knowing at least the little bit that I do, I was like, I feel like, doesn't he mess something up every single movie? And
yes.
there's still like trusting him and giving him this stuff or whatever it may be. He's still handling certain things. But yeah, for them to basically give all of the decisions to him who openly drinks constantly, I feel like.
Well, I mean, like, again, so this is kind of one of the, this is one of the kind of plot points that seems to be a story, but then doesn't become a story. Uh-huh. Because he doesn't drink as heavily, like in the other movie. You know, he's always kind of like this kind of crazy uncle character of like, you know, it kind of irresponsible, you know, kind of grumpy, you know, kind of snarky, sarcastic, kind of funny, you know, telling funny stories, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He is that kind of character. But yeah, so it does seem like in this movie, that after he has lost basically Rocky and his family, their fortune, that he goes into like kind of full blown alcoholism.
Yeah.
And it feels like that is going to be a major plot line or a major, you know, like kind of sub story to the subplot to the main, you know, the main meat of the movie. But it is not.
No.
It's just he drinks a lot throughout the movie and nobody mentions it.
Yeah. Well, it even, he gets upset at Adrian because she's yelling at him about losing all their money and he gets defensive. Like, well, I didn't do it. And you'd think, well, maybe there'll be some sort of arc in terms of like feeling remorse that he is the one that lost all their money. Like he played a substantial role in doing that. Or I don't know. It just,
No, again, that does feel like it could be a subplot of like running through the movie of like a kind of redemptive arc. Of like maybe he does something, you know, like to win some of the money back or something, or either that he just learns his lesson of like, yes, I am, even though I'm not directly responsible because I didn't actually steal the money, that I still have some moral responsibility there of like, I gave this guy the power to kind of, this accountant, the power to rob us. But no, that, you know, it's just like, it's kind of forgotten about. Adrian is very briefly, very angry with him in like two scenes. The scene in the mansion, which will soon be sold off, and the scene with the lawyer meeting. And then it's never mentioned again. And he's just kind of wacky Uncle Paulie for the rest of the movie.
Who gets to live with them still, and yeah.
Yeah. All is good. So yes, yeah, you know, like you say, a couple of things there that are kind of set up as if they're going to be subplots, if they're going to matter, and they absolutely 100% do not. Much like the thing that's just right coming up, which we get Rocky has a brain scan where he's told he is not allowed to fight. He will not be, no commission will allow him to fight. Now this brain damage has come to the surface and been diagnosed by these two doctors. Interestingly, at no point does he ask for a second opinion. But there you go.
I don't know how to even push it more forward. But yeah, this whole first, because I know we'll get into, I guess, what the movie is kind of about once Tommy comes in. Mm-hmm. But the whole first, those 40 minutes are just like build up for something that never happens, basically.
Basically, yeah. And yeah, lots of... And it's weird because, like, talking about it, like, similarly, if you saw it written down or talking about it here, you'd think that there's lots of plot happening here. There is events happening, but it's just kind of, they're disconnected. There's just one scene happens after the next, and you feel like they're going to build a narrative on top of that, but they don't. It's just like, well, anyway, on to the next scene, which is we're selling off the mansion. And we've got a nice little, we've already been told what's happened. We already know he's lost his fortune. We already know he's been diagnosed with brain damage. But then in case the audience member is an idiot, we get a newspaper montage telling us what's happened so far in the movie.
Yeah. And then they even make, I don't know. It just feels like they wanted to get back to the Philadelphia roots. And the working, kind of like that working class roots. And then that was just their quick fix, but didn't know how to keep going with that.
Well, but even, yeah, absolutely. It does seem like, I mean, that seems like the main point why they brought back the original director, John G. Avildsen.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like, yes, they're trying to get back to the roots of the franchise, get back to the kind of more grounded, character-driven drama. But they do it in such a way that just feels, it just doesn't feel convincing. It just doesn't have the same emotion, commitment, authenticity, kind of groundedness that the original movie had. You know, like in this movie, it talks a lot about, you know, we'll talk very soon about like Tommy Gunn, talks about Tommy Gunn versus Rocky and how Tommy Gunn doesn't have the heart of Rocky. Well, this movie doesn't have the heart of the original. Like, it just feels everything rings hollow. Even down to, like, we get these scenes as the estate's being sold off of, like, oh, yeah, you know, Rocky finds his outfit from Rocky One in the attic. And now, you know, because that's the outfit he has to wear in the streets. And, you know, and then we get this kind of the Mickey flashback, which is like, again, it's supposed to give this kind of emotion and sentiment and stuff like that. And again, it doesn't feel particularly convincing, you know, even though as much as I love Burgess Meredith in that role. And again, I mean, Burgess Meredith, like at the time he was like 82 years old and he does not look particularly well. In this movie, it does, I mean, he would actually survive another 7 years. He wouldn't die till 1997 when he was 89. But, he doesn't look in great shape. He looks kind of on his last legs and, it looks like he's really struggling through that flashback scene that he's in.
Yeah. And well, sadly. And so did the, because it ends up coming up when they're talking about it, the whole, as I've only seen the first one, I know there's a love that he has for Rocky, but it seems like there was still those boundaries, I guess, where, but I could be wrong based on, you know, what happens in 2, 3, or 4, but this feels like it's on the nose.
It's kind of developed more. And like, You see the Bond more. And then there's like, you know, this big emotional moment in Rocky 3 when Rocky 3, you know, when Mickey dies in Rocky 3. So sorry for anybody who's not seen Rocky 3, spoilers there, Mickey dies.
Which I've watched the YouTube clip of it, so I know
that. Oh, right, you've seen Mickey's dead, right, okay, fair
enough. Yeah.
Like in the dressing room before he goes to fight Clubber Lang the first time. Okay.
So then they end up back in the mean streets of Philadelphia.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the thing that kind of annoys me about the film. It's just like everything kind of seems like forced of like, oh yeah, he goes to the bar and like, you know, he's, you know, like he kind of comes out and he's obviously had a drink. Apparently there's like a longer scene where he's in the bar kind of getting drunk. There is a director's cut of this film. It's never been released.
Yeah.
A work print of it was released by allegedly by the director John G. Evelston, the online that was available on YouTube, but then taken down via copyright. I think you can see it on Daily Motion, but it's about half an hour longer and some of it's done a bit differently. Like we'll talk about it in a minute, but like the soundtrack is different for example. Okay. It's kind of all Bill Conti's music and, there's a few different scenes that are either not in the movie or are kind of done a bit, edited a bit differently, or some of the scenes are like the same visually but have like different dialogue, and yeah, so it's kind of, there's a bit of a difference. I've not seen the director's cut. Like I say, I think you can find the work print of it online on Daily Motion, I think, but it's a really shitty quality. That's the only available thing that you can see. It's just this really shitty quality work print of it, because the director's cut never actually got a release.
Okay. I mean, this one already feels 10 minutes longer than it needs to be, or more, but yeah.
Yeah. For sure. But yeah, so, and again, like that's the other thing I was going to say about that scene. Like, yeah, that feels forced as well. I was kind of like, oh yeah, he's back in the streets of Philadelphia. So yeah, of course he's like, suddenly smoking again, you know, it's, you know. But
he has to make sure and teach his son that there's con men.
Yeah.
However he calls it, hustlers, and the son doesn't understand what the words mean, but knows deception or something. I don't know.
Yeah, he doesn't understand hustler, but he's like, oh, you mean deception?
Yeah. Because like, son is
hustlers
smart.
And scams doesn't understand that, but deception, that's what you're talking about. Yeah. That's what we're talking about.
So this is to show that the son just doesn't fit in on these, you know, mean streets.
Yeah, because he's just too intellectual. He's too intellectual for Rocky or these mean streets. You know, he's above all that.
And that is something that is constantly said throughout the movie. Rocky says it about how smart he is, and
yes,
it's really driven home.
Yeah, it's you know, it's not subtly done for sure, but it's around this time we get our introduction, our brief introduction of Tommy Gunn, where Tommy Gunn tries to introduce himself to Rocky. How do you want to do this? Either we can have me make the listener sad again, or you can talk about his introduction a little bit, and then I'll make everybody sad.
So I could talk about how he comes in, and then we can make him sad.
Yes.
So they'll just know, hearing us talk about it now, that you will be sad with anticipation of it. But so he's on the streets. It looks like he's kind of been, even though he doesn't even have a car, it's one of those where he's just been sleeping on the streets just because he really wants to meet Rocky. And he's a fighter himself, and he is trying to talk to him, but Duke comes in and drives from wherever he's at. I think he keeps coming into Philadelphia, even though he's probably based out of New York or wherever it may be. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to promote the fight again. And he just really wants Rocky to fight, and pushes Tommy Gunn to the side. And then even Adrian runs down and gets in his face again, in Duke's face, and tells him that Rocky is no longer fighting. And I think this is when Duke says that Adrian is the one with the cojones, which then Rocky doesn't know what cojones mean later on. That's a little joke, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Like, but again, this is one of those things where, like, Rocky throughout the movies, he's obviously an uneducated guy, like a kind of uneducated in a kind of goofy, endearing way. He's a little slow, and that's how he's kind of always been portrayed. But in this movie, he's portrayed as if he's actively mentally handicapped.
Yeah. That's what I think before I was getting into and kind of insinuate is that, like, it gets to the point where he almost becomes more childlike with a lot of stuff, where Adrian is just, like, really fighting all of his battles for him, and that he's really kind of just become this lumbering guy that only knows how to fight with his fists, and that's it. Like, he doesn't know how to really handle anything else in this outside world. And yeah, it's just, it's strange. And this whole scenario gets repeated a lot, where it's like, Duke comes, he wants him to fight, Adrian steps in, and it's like, it just keeps going to the point where it feels like filler of like, yeah, we get the point.
Yeah. I know. It's just like, there is a kind of lot of kind of rinse and repeat of like, and again, because they're trying to go for this kind of slightly kind of grittier, back to the streets, back to the original heart of the franchise kind of thing, and then you keep getting this cartoon character popping up being like, hey, come and fight, blah, only in America. Like, yeah, they yeah. even went to stealing Don King's catchphrase to really yeah. hammer home the point that this is a cartoon Don King.
Yeah.
You know? Yes. So Tommy Gunn, this is where we get sad again. Tommy Gunn was played by the real life boxer Tommy Morrison, who in real life did briefly hold the WBO heavyweight title a few years after this movie, and was about 20 years old when he filmed this movie and had an undefeated record at the time. And unfortunately, though, Tommy Morrison had quite a sad life afterwards. He had to retire from boxing in 1996 when he tested positive for HIV. And then he tried to make a brief comeback in 2007 after a few negative HIV tests that he had. But his comeback didn't really go anywhere. And yeah, he obviously had some issues with drugs and stuff, and some issues with the law, and there was a time he was in jail for like 2 years, and then sadly in 2013 he died aged 44 from septicemia, septic shock, multiple organ failure and cardiac arrest. And it is, you know, it's kind of one of those things of like, as much as I kind of want to kind of laugh at his performance, just like kind of knowing all that is just kind of like, really, just like the Sage Stallone thing. It's just like, yeah. It's just really, really fucking sad. And like, it's really too young in age to die, you know, like Sage Stallone at 36 and Tony yeah. Morrison 44. It's just, brutal.
Well, and even hearing that, I mean, I agree with you, but even hearing that is kind of why, like, you see the foundation being laid of the story of Rocky V, and you think how relevant, you know, I guess Rocky V could have been, or, you know, because Rocky V, it really builds this kind of what happens to these fighters, at least in the beginning. It's like starting out, you know, the fighter at the end of their career, and all they know is this fighting, and who are they afterwards, and, you know, really doing this whole thing. But then kind of, again, it's just a shame because, like, hearing that and going off of the beginning, at least, it seems like there's,
yeah,
you know, there could be a lot of symbolism, but then there's,
yeah, for sure. And like, you do feel like there's a lot of interesting stories this film could have told, like just a simple drama of like Rocky and his family trying to rebuild their life, you know, without the kind of super heavy nods to the original that this movie's got of like, Rocky returns to the gym, Adrian's working in that pet shop again because they just kept her job open all these years, you know, like you know, that kind of thing, like, you know, just rebuilding their lives. Or they could have had like, and again, like, you could have had this drama that was like kind of highlighting how, you know, kind of dodgy boxing promoters can be, and how like the fight business does chew up and spit out a lot of fighters. And yeah, there's a lot of people, not just in boxing, but in MMA and a lot of combat sports that, you know, by the end of their career, you know, are kind of, it's taken all, everything from them, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't have, you know, they stop, you know, and that's why lots of fighters like come out of retirement all the time, because they just don't know anything else. Like, yeah, the fight business is their life. And there's, yeah, there's a interesting story to be told there. And this film singularly does not tell any of those stories.
Yeah. It wouldn't be until, you know, you had, I know there was a documentary that just came out about, I can't remember now. I know it's the wrestler. I mean, there's the movie The Wrestler, and then there was just a documentary that came out about that he kept going back to, and kept, yeah, going back to his career and how his body was basically breaking down. Why can't I think it's Nail in the Coffin, isn't?
Oh, the one about Vampiro.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, okay, I've not checked that out yet, but it's supposed to be good. The wrestling business is very similar. Yeah, lots of wrestlers have retired multiple times because, like, the wrestling business is all they know. And they don't know how to kind of live on in the outside mainstream normal world. It's just that's all they've got, really, you know, like, and I think it's just like the addiction to that, you know, that feedback they get from the audience as well. You know, it is, obviously it's like a kind of mixture of things, but yeah, for sure. But I suppose we should go back onto this movie, and, you know, talking about this movie and it just kind of jumping onto things, because it's just like, this is interesting, right? Another thing this movie does is, so we get like a little scene of like Rocky Jr. He's getting bullied. He gets his coat stolen, and, you know, he's getting pushed around by these other guys and stuff like that. And then he meets this girl who's called Jewel, and they kind of spark off a relationship. And then kind of in the background, there's like rap music. And throughout the movie, there's just kind of these kind of hip hop beats in various scenes. And it does, again, feel like one of those things of like, rap is cool, right? That's kind of hip and now.
Yeah. No, I mean, it really feels like they're doing the throwback, but also for the new generation. This is rap, the remake.
We're done with the kids of. And all that.
Yeah. But even that storyline, it just, again, mixed with everything else that is going on, it just, it kind of gets lost. Like, there's so much point as Rocky Jr. is like going down his spiral and becoming a lost kid. You're kind of like, well, you didn't even focus on him long enough for me to be like, how has he been a lost kid? Hasn't this been just like a week or something? Had a piercing or whatever?
Oh, I love that. There's like in the kind of couple of scenes where he's the bad kid. And literally it does seem like this was like a week long phase at Christmas. Like to kind of signify that he's become the bad kid, he has like a long earring. And then in one other scene, he smokes. Yeah. And then immediately after that, as soon as Rocky gives him the kind of inspirational speech of like, oh, let's, you know, be friends again, let's be home team, he goes back to wearing like sensible jumpers and, you know, being like the super good, like, cause when he's the bad kid, he's wearing like a black t-shirt, denim jacket, earring, you know, but then he's got like a kind of bad kid haircut, and then like, yeah, you know, like the next scene is like, you know, back to being a good kid. He's got his curtains, he's got his sensible jumper, you know, like he's all sweetest little guy.
And that is that whole story.
Yeah. And that's, and again, that's like everything just feels like filler, you know, like even like, so, you know, just kind of at this point in the movie, we get like two montages basically back to back.
Yes.
Even the montages feel just kind of like uninspiring. Like, at least, you know, the montages in the previous movies, each of the montages have been like, yeah, fist pumping, you know, like it really gets you off your seat. It really, you know, is one of those things that, you know, even if it's kind of silly and kind of over the top, you know, there's an emotional response there. But in this movie, there's just, nothing. And yeah. I think also it doesn't help that basically we get two back to back. We get yeah. one of like Tommy's initial rise, and then we get a brief scene of Rocky Jr. Beating up his bullies, getting his jacket back, then taking his jacket, showing off to his dad and being like, ah, I got my jacket back. And then Rocky being like, yeah, cool. Like back to training with Tommy. And then we cut immediately back into another montage, yes. which we continue the rise of Tommy and getting bigger and bigger fights. So it's just like, and you're just like, yeah, okay, this is yeah. well, interesting, I guess.
I wrote happy montage for the first one because you're seeing the son, you know, he's doing the training too, and, you know, Tommy Gunn. And then the other one said sad montage because it's like, this is the one that's highlighting what's to come and that Tommy isn't, you know, all that Rocky hoped he would be. That's, that's basically all they are. It could be the same montage. But not.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of happy montage because it's happy montage because Tommy's kind of on the rise, and we see Rocky Jr. kind of, you know, he's going to beat his bullies because he's getting his own little training yeah. montage. But it's like not quite happy as well because you can clearly tell that Rocky Jr. is angry at his dad. You know, he's been trained yeah. by Polly and he's upset about that. But like, yes, for another montage, I've just put like, you know, everybody's sad. I've just put Adrian sad, Rocky yeah. Jr. sad, Tommy frustrated. That like, you know, that's that montage, you know, because Tommy keeps being told that he is Rocky's puppet, but yes. His puppet, because that makes sense, unlike what is said later on.
Yeah, no, it's that, yeah, which we'll get to more. But, I mean, even going, because we're talking about the montages and kind of realizing that's, you know, that we kind of jumped ahead. But I mean, in all honesty, that because we missed the scene where Tommy is actually, he spars and he's too.
Oh yeah, we kind of skipped over the, and because we skipped over the kind of initial sparring session, and when like he comes back to dinner and he basically stays with Rocky from that point in the movie.
Yeah. But again, it kind of goes to this movie in itself of that. I don't know. I don't even think we would have had to say, you know, I mean, I brought it up, but you wouldn't even have to say that stuff because it just ultimately doesn't feel like it matters. As you've, you know, been saying, nothing really feels like it matters.
Although, like kind of talking about that part of the part of the movie, we do, there's two things that I do want to briefly talk about. One, because I think it's funny, like Tommy is giving this speech, you know, once he comes out of the gym, he's beating up that guy and Rocky's not sure about managing him. And then he comes out and he gives him a big speech about like how, you know, Rocky was his favorite guy and he's watched him since his first title fight with Apollo Creed and he's followed his career and he wants to follow in the same path. And yeah, you know, like, and he's hungry for this and he's determined. And then after he gives him that speech, we like lock on to Rocky's face and he doesn't say anything. For a long time.
Yeah.
For what feels like a long time. And then he just goes, are you hungry? And Tommy looks confused and then kind of goes, yeah. and then it's like, okay, well, Adrian's a good cook. You'll enjoy her cooking. And then we kind of go off to the house. And it was like, this scene should have been shorter. Like, it takes him for, and it's not like he's looking, it's not like Rocky's looking thoughtful and kind of chewing on what Tommy has just said to him about, like, oh, you should be my manager because of this. He just looks completely blank-faced, kind of vacuous, kind of like he's just thinking about his shopping list or something.
Yeah.
And then he's like, and then he kind of clicks back into being present in the scene. Yeah. And it's just like, are you hungry? You know, it's just like the weirdest little moment.
He remembered the cameras were on.
Yeah. Suddenly he stopped thinking about his shopping list.
Yeah.
Also, like, so there is this, basically, Rocky gives Tommy, Rocky Jr.'s room in the basement, because that's what you do. But it's weird as well how Tommy's kind of presented as like a kid himself. I mean, I know he's like 20, but like he's presented as if he's like a little kid sometimes.
Yeah.
Because like Rocky is showing Tommy the Rocky Marciano cufflink that he's got as a necklace, and he's, you know, really excitedly talking about it. And then Rocky Jr. tries to get Rocky's attention, and then Rocky's like, yeah, that's cool, but I, you know, like, I'll, you know, hold that thought, but I just want to finish talking to Tommy about this. And Tommy gives Rocky Jr. a sideways glance, being like, yeah, fuck off, man. You know, yeah. Like, this is my time with Rocky. And he does the same look when Rocky Jr. gets his jacket back and they're sparring, and he's just, he gives the same kind of sulky lip and is kind of like, come on, keep, you know, let's get back to sparring, no? You know, yeah. Like.
Yeah, no, it is.
Oh dear. We've kind of covered kind of skipping back ahead into the movie. We kind of covered like the bit where, you know, Rocky Jr. kind of go off the rails. I mean, I suppose we could talk about, you know, Polly being a terrible Santa, but
well, I
doesn't
mean,
even try for a second.
Well, that's one of those interesting bits of like, so he's a terrible Santa. The kids are leaving on Christmas Eve because
because he's friends Rocky with Jr.'s, the bullies now. Because you beat up a bully, they become your friend. That's what happens.
And so they're leaving, and what is it? And that's when, well, a series of things happen. But for this part of the story, then we'll get into the Tommy Gunn section because they're all kind of overlapping. But Adrian is yelling at Rocky saying, you're losing your son, you're losing me. And it feels off because we're like, well, there's only been like one scene of him being rebellious, and you haven't really even been around that much in the movie, but then it kind
of. I think you're supposed to assume that all of this has happened in the two montages. Yeah. The two like, because, like, he's saying, like, oh, this didn't happen, you know, last year, last Christmas. So I think you're supposed to assume that basically from the point of the first sparring session to that point has been roughly a year.
Okay.
Or I don't know. Like maybe not quite a year or something. Time has passed.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I think you're supposed to assume that like there's been roughly a year of that, like from the montages. But again, it's not exactly signposted that this is happening because they're totally off screen for a while, and then suddenly Adrian and Rocky Jr. come back and they're like, oh, you've not been in our lives for ages. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
You were in their lives like two scenes ago. Like, what?
well, that's what, because for like when watching it, it felt like, so were they still in their mansion last Christmas? And I don't know, even parts of the dialogue, it's like, so have they only been in Philadelphia? Have they been in Philadelphia a year or has it been?
I wasn't sure about that. You know, I've watched this film a few times actually. I'm still not sure about that. So I'm not sure if like last Christmas refers to the fact that they were still in the mansion last year, just, or that last Christmas they had just moved back into Philly. And so it's been a year. It's been between kind of 9 months and a year, I think.
Okay.
Like this, the Tommy's career, has happened. I don't know. I'm guessing that is the timeline. But again, like in terms of what we actually see on screen, like everything in that regard feels totally fast forwarded. So it just doesn't have any emotional weight. So like when Adrian is like super overacting and, you know, I've written this in all caps where she says, you're losing us, you're losing your family. It just feels like super over the top and happy.
Yeah. And then, so
can,
it's like, yeah, there's so many little workings that I don't know.
We should have explained, how did the line about you're losing us, you're losing your family, come about? In the first place.
Okay. So as we were kind of mentioning before, that there's kind of a lot of overlapping of, in terms of, you know, the movie itself, but especially during that scene where he's dealing with his son, who has now gone off the rails and become a complete rebel, apparently, for a long period of time, as we're made to believe. And then during that time, Tommy is supposed to be there for Christmas with them. And that's all really Rocky is worried about. And Rocky wants to even give him one of the cufflinks, the one that he has, which kind of really sends everybody over the edge, apparently. But Tommy doesn't show up because he's hanging out with George Washington Duke, who wants to promote him and is kind of giving the same spiel to Tommy Gunn that he tried with Rocky, but, you know, obviously Rocky denied and Adrian and everybody saw through that. But he gives him $20,000 is just like a, you know, just to show how serious he means business, and he gets a new car. And anyways, so then Tommy and Duke and everybody shows up to Rocky's house during Christmas Eve after the kids have left because they're upset about Uncle Paulie being,
shit Santa.
Yeah. Who smells of gin or something. There's some comment made about it. And, Tommy then, so they give these kind of presents and Tommy says that he's going to go and do the fight. And then he's going to go leave with his new girlfriend in his car.
It is implied this kind of bought and paid for by Jack.
Yeah. Throughout several moments. Yeah. There's even the reporters do it later.
Yes.
But as Tommy's driving, so Duke has already left. And as Tommy and his girlfriend are driving away, Rocky is running with the car and telling him, you know, that he needs to wait, that it's not about, he's doing it too soon and they're going to do it their own way. And he's trying to say, again, an important issue that we've kind of talked about would be something that would be really cool to highlight in this movie, but they don't. He's saying, you know, people like Duke, they're going to chew you up and spit you out. They just want the quick buck. They're just doing this. It's very shady. And I'm trying to keep you away from that, like Mick did for me.
The kind of dark side of the business. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously Tommy says, well, I'm not you, because that's who he keeps getting referred to as Rocky's puppet, Rocky's boy, robot, and so on. And then saying, I'm not you and you're not Mick. And so then he really speeds off. And that's when Adrian comes out and has her over the top blow up that I guess is right for the movie. But it doesn't feel right for us, the audience, because we've only seen, again, the little bit of time of him with Tommy through the montages that it only feels like it's been a couple of months.
Yeah, it doesn't feel... Yeah, we've not really properly built up this relationship at all on screen. And there is this thing as well where the movie can't quite decide what Tommy is.
Yeah.
Like, because... At some moments, it's kind of like he's portrayed as like, he was always going to portray him. And like, it's almost kind of suggested by that, by like the way other characters are of like, you know, Polly seems to think that he knew that this was always going to happen. And like Rocky Jr. similarly seems to have seen this coming for months. And, you know, like, everybody seems to know somehow that like, Tommy is going to end up being this Judas character. And, you know, it seems like at certain points he is like presented as this like violent villain who's always going to just, using Rocky as a stepping stone, but then at other points he's kind of portrayed as this like innocent dupe who's just being kind of pulled, his strings are just being pulled by Duke, you know, like he's just being tricked basically. And he's not that bad, but the movie just doesn't have a pulse on what the character is at all,
because it even gives that, he gives that backstory that his, he got into boxing because his father used to beat him and his mother. Like, it gives all these kind of reasonings and stuff like that. And then, yeah, then it just kind of, again, like you were saying, doesn't know what to do with it. It's like they want to throw in something that's going to be very emotionally heavy, but they don't.
Yeah. Also, one of the kind of fun facts I got from the kind of background research was that Tommy Morrison worked with a pair of acting coaches, Richard and Leslie Brander, who initially were booked for like 2 weeks of pre-production and the first couple of weeks of the shoot, but then were kept on for the whole of the shoot. like for the whole movie, and we're even giving kind of some coaching to some of the actors on film as well, and had conversations with Sly himself and Talia Shire, and we're just kept on set because John G. Evelson and Sylvester Bloom were kind of impressed with their work, so we're kept for the full length of the shoot.
And that's a kind of an interesting bit. I mean, having you talk about and that you don't realize for a while is that so many film shoots will have, or even actors will, you know, you think they're, you know, these incredible, which they are, you know, even the most incredible actors, but they'll still have like acting coaches with them on set, and they're still they're constantly doing that. It's not like
And I suppose to be fair to Tommy Morrison, whose performance is not good, but he is not an actor. He is a boxer. He, like, his entire filmography was, before this, he had an uncredited cameo in They Live, and after this, he appeared in one episode of Sybil, and that is it.
Okay.
So, yeah, not an extensive acting repertoire to really draw from. So, yeah. To be fair, from that point, you know, he is pretty wooden in the movie, but then again, he's not an actor.
Yeah. So, after that, they is kind of when Rocky and his son connect, as we've talked about again.
Yes. And he goes from smoking and piercings and denim jackets back to the sensible jumpers. It only took one inspirational speech.
Yeah.
And that was that knocked that on the head.
Well, I like even when he's going to talk to his son, the girl, Jewel, said, you know, asks Rocky Jr., do you want me to stay with you? And he says, no, that he'll talk to his father alone. And then Jewel asks Rocky, are you going to hit him?
Yeah. You're not going to hit him, are you?
Yeah.
And Rocky's like, no, of course I'm not. just again to show what a rough neighborhood this is. The assumption that parents are just going to beat up their children.
Exactly.
As kind of cheesy and unconvincing as it is, there is something a little touching about this. I think maybe just because knowing it's like his real life son and stuff like that. Yeah. So in this scene, it's, you know, when they hug at the end and, you know, like he goes in for that kind of awkward kiss on the cheek and that, you know, it is quite sweet.
Yeah. No, I mean, there are little moments throughout when it's focusing on the emotion that I think it works, but
it just doesn't do it enough.
Yeah. But so then everything's happy, kind of, I guess. And they are watching the title fight with Tommy Gunn, and Rocky is excited. Yeah. And Rocky is excited. He's even punching the punching bag like Tommy is. And
this was another thing that, again, he's just been betrayed by this guy. Like, based on the timeline of the movie, it seems like basically days before.
Yeah.
And so, again, this kind of points to the fact that, like, Rocky in this movie is not portrayed in the goofy, kind of endearing, slow way he's been portrayed in the previous movies, but as just a straight-up idiot. Of like, this guy's totally betrayed me. He's totally just used me as a stepping stone, but I'm just going to root for him anyway. Even although every Rocky, like, cause in the actual fight that's being shown, like everybody's booing this guy because everybody feels betrayed on Rocky's behalf. And yet Rocky himself is cheering for him.
Yeah. And because even talking about living on the streets and him being street smart and stuff like that, it just makes him out to be very naive, I think, more so than anything.
Yeah, that is true. That's true. I mean, he's always been presented, again, it's just like, it just seems, you know, he's always been presented as like soft-hearted and a little bit naive.
Yeah.
But in a way that made sense, yeah. You know, the way that made sense of that you found kind of like touching or endearing or are kind of a little bit goofy, and you're like, you know, like he's, you know, that kind of, he's just this kind of big hearty puppy dog, really, you know, like, you know, it made you feel kind of warm, but like just in this movie, it's done in this way that just makes you kind of like just kind of shout at the screen, just being like, stop being an idiot. Like this, you know, like you just get frustrated with him.
Yeah. No, exactly. So Tommy wins easily, apparently, and we'll find out more.
Yeah.
And then we get to the point where he's finally going to thank somebody for his win. He talks about the person that's always been the angel on his shoulder, which Rocky talked about that he'll be the angel on his shoulder. So obviously it's going to be Rocky, but no. He thanks George Washington Duke.
And then this is where the penny finally fucking drops for Rocky, where he's God damn it. You know, like, yeah. And then, and again, it's played in this kind of silly way where everybody else in the scene seems to know that's exactly what Tommy's going to say and is just waiting for him to say it. And nobody, like, Paulie doesn't seem surprised. Adrian doesn't seem surprised. Rocky Jr. doesn't seem surprised. The only person who seems surprised is Rocky. So, like, yeah, even the kind of sympathy that Rocky gets from, like, Rocky Jr. and that, it all feels, like, incredibly patronizing of, like, yeah, we all know you're an idiot, but, you know, we love you.
Yeah. Even the audience in the, they aren't surprised.
No, nobody else is totally there. They're already booing. They're just waiting on him for to say some smarmy shit. And so again, it feels like it should be this moment where it's like, oh, the betrayal is complete and you feel heartbroken for Rocky. But instead, you just feel like, you know, kind of grabbing him by the face, just being like, yeah, come on, man, wake up, you know, like, yeah. It's a frustrating movie.
Very frustrating. And that's the thing, going from Seagal, who I hadn't really seen any of his movies, at least there was that silly element that you could have fun with, where this, I don't know, it's like opposite in a way, where it's like there wasn't that silliness of being like, well, you know, I can have a laugh with it.
Yeah, it's true, because you keep seeing things that you're like, oh, you could have made something out of that.
Yeah.
And the fact that they don't is frustrating. And then there's just these other things where it's just like things happen. And it's just like, so, you know, with scenes we've not mentioned, but like, there's so much that kind of happens. It just kind of feels kind of blah or kind of filler. You know, it's a tediously paced movie. It's a difficult. Yeah. You can't watch it as it's a bad movie, but it's not a bad movie. That's also a guilty pleasure movie. You know, it's just some of it is just incredibly forgettable. Some of it's incredibly frustrating, and it's not a great mixture.
Yeah.
Oh dear. This final bit though.
Yeah.
This kind of final segment, there is some entertaining moments in this and there is some kind of funny lines. Like, so when they have the press conference and all the boxing reporters, who are generally played by real boxing writers, are kind of mocking Tommy Gunn because they're basically saying that Union Cain wasn't a real champion. He was a paper champion only. And one of the reporters, in a line that I really liked, was he said, Cain has so much glass in his jaw, it ought to be a chandelier, which I was like, that's a peach of a line.
Yeah. And so the paper champion thing is because Cain didn't officially beat Rocky for the title, so he just by default took the championship.
Yes,
I guess.
So, like, yeah, I think what we're supposed to assume that, like, even though at the start of the movie, the George Washington Duke is kind of talking up the fight and kind of presenting his fighter as the challenger, I think what we're supposed to presume, if you know the kind of boxing structure at all, is something like that the Federation decided, you know, how like all the different federations like the WBO, IBF, all these kind of things, like they have these kind of ranking systems. And then, you know, sometimes a boxer might want to make a big money fight, but they can't make a big money fight because they've got a mandatory challenger as chosen by the Federation. So I think maybe, like, Union Cain became the mandatory challenger And then there was like a vacant belt and he just kind of picked up the vacant belt. I don't know, something like that. Again, I'm just guessing from things I know about boxing rather than things the film tells me.
Yeah. Which I know, and yeah, it's made very clear by kind of all the press that Tommy Gunn wouldn't actually do well in a facing a real opponent is what they're kind of saying.
Yeah, facing like a high caliber champion. Basically, they're saying like Rocky faced all these high caliber world class champions and like he's just faced like this, yeah, paper champ. Like, he's not of the same caliber as Rocky's opponents. But we've mentioned robots a few times.
Yeah.
And it's not made sense to the listener probably unless they've seen this movie. And so we now actually get to explain the context of that. So after the press conference, Tommy storms out angrily with Duke and the other promoter, Marilyn, who's played by a former homicide detective, Mike Sheehan. Oh. So there you go. And then he starts talking about, you know, that he doesn't want to be called a robot, which at this point in the film, nobody has called him.
Yeah, that's why I'm not sure if it was like a line change or something where it was supposed to be where they said robot earlier, but then they're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Let's change it to puppet. And then they just forgot to change it in the script later on or something.
I know. I don't know. Like maybe in the director's cut, maybe there's another scene where somebody.
Yeah.
Not that makes any sense. Like you don't call somebody's robot, you know, like that's not generally the phraseology of that, you know, like, yeah, like being in, you know, like I don't want everybody to, I want everybody to stop saying I'm in Rocky's shadow, you know, or yeah. I want everyone to say I'm not Rock, just Rocky's boy or I'm not his puppet. These all make sense. Robot don't make sense.
No.
And the fact that this line comes back makes even less sense.
Yeah. Well, and then I like the fact that George Washington Duke is like he flipped of saying, well, the press aren't wrong. Like you're not even that, you know.
Yeah.
He's telling the truth of that. Well, you're not going to be able to beat Rocky or, you know, you can't beat Rocky. You're not that good, but I'm just using you. I don't know. He's very honest about what he's doing and Tommy Gunn still sticks with him.
Yeah, he's very open about his villainy. And then he's basically like, yeah, I think you're supposed to be convinced that Tommy is blinded by money because Duke is like, oh, if we get this fight with Rocky, it's going to be massive. It's going to be the biggest payday you've ever seen. Only in America. They really drive Don King's phrase into the ground. Duke says only in, like, I should say George Washington Duke because not to be confused with Duke, who is the trainer that we saw at the start of the movie, who feels like he's going to be a main character and has been like a kind of side character in other movies, but like just gets completely dropped in this movie. Also good. So George Washington Duke, he's going on about like the big payday and all that kind of stuff. And, so. I don't know. Like, yeah, he's convinced by the money. Yeah. Only in America.
Yeah.
That's the main thing that they knew about Don King. He promoted boxing and his catchphrase is only in America. And then they wrote a cartoon character around that.
Well, he even tells Tommy that the only reason why he got as far as he did so quickly is because of his skin tone and
something that could be further developed, but no. I mean, because again, that is something that's not really mentioned and then suddenly it's kind of dropped of being like, oh yeah, Tommy's only getting ahead because he's the new Great White Hope. But, you know, we'll not discuss that in any great detail. We'll just kind of drop it in at the end and, you know, you can do with it what you will. But anyway, we've not got long to go, so we'll just skip on to its silly conclusion.
Yeah, so the only way for Tommy to actually prove himself and get that payday is he needs to get Rocky to accept that fight And even if he can't accept it or doesn't accept the fight, then he needs to assault him and get him to accept any way possible. It's basically what Duke tells Tommy to do. So they, I guess, go to the bar where this is all happening while after the fight immediately happened. Apparently, I guess, because
yes, apparently this is directly after they've gone directly from the press conference to the bar.
Yeah, because, you know, after the fight and Rocky wasn't, you know, thanked, him and Paulie decide to go have a drink, where then Rocky Jr. is going to watch TV, which kind of the only reason for that is so that he can see his dad is on TV later, I guess.
Yep.
So as they're in the bar,
very much one of those kind of because the plot said so kind of things.
Yeah. So yeah, as they're in the bar, they get called out by Duke and by Tommy, who want to do the fight, but Rocky doesn't want to, and he keeps saying he's not going to, or saying phrases like, you know, I thought we were brothers, or I thought we were close. He says it multiple times in different ways, but you're too greedy.
Yeah. And yeah, we get the two more callbacks to the robot line. When he's standing in a car, he says, I ain't nobody's robot. And then when he comes into the bar, he says, people keep calling me robot. Yeah. It's like, nobody has called you this in the movie. What are you talking about, Tommy? Have you got a head injury too?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he does say when he first meets him that he doesn't wear a helmet or whatever, for training. So
That is true. Maybe everybody has a head injury.
Yeah.
In the bar, you know, like you said, this confrontation goes down. Rocky wants no part of it. But then Tommy crosses the line. He punches out Paulie, the good old loyal Paulie, who accidentally swindled them out of their fortune. But we've forgotten about that completely by this stage. So he's punched out. And that gets Rocky real mad.
Well, it's supposed to be, I feel like that was the redemption that was... we were supposed to get from the beginning that you were talking about, of like they were laying seeds of Paulie like having an arc, and it's not there at all, but at least that's the like, oh, Paulie kind of stood up for Rocky kind of to get hit.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. So then, yeah, Rocky says, well, then let's take this outside, and the news cameras are there and everybody. And George Washington Duke tells Tommy don't, because he's not a street fighter and Rocky is a street fighter. So yeah.
And then that's kind of the conclusion of the movie. Like the rest of the movie is like the street fight. We get like a few rounds of the street fight. Rocky wins the first round where he just like comes at Tommy with a flurry of punches, like knocks him on his back, and you know, tells him that, like, that, you know, he's, you know, like these streets are his, basically.
Yeah.
And then Tommy wins the second round completely. He like punches out like several extras before he gets to
he hits Rocky as Rocky's walking away, so he even does cheap shots, and that's how
cheap shot. That's how he wins the second round. He like basically punches out a bunch of extras and then like hits Rocky in the back of his head and then like and starts laying into him after that, and knocks Rocky on the ground. But then once he's kind of like, we've kind of half remembered the brain injury thing.
Yeah. Kind of. You know, that crucial plot element. That...
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we get this kind of weird hallucination, right?
Yeah. It even goes into like experimental fate where you see Rocky and there's blood pouring down his face at one point. Like it's doing all these weird flashes.
Yes, that is true. And then it's kind of intercut with like, scenes from Rocky IV, which we already had at the start of the movie. The scenes from the flashback that was filmed for this movie with Mickey. And like you say, like this kind of weird experimental stuff, you know. Yeah. And, but then that's one more round. That's what's needed. One more round. And Mickey convinces him to come back in the flashback that he has during the hallucinations.
He says, get up, you bum. And then also says, remember, Mickey loves you.
Yeah. And it's actually like, so as cheesy as like the you know, certainly some of the sequels get. Like, they always end in a boxing match because that's how these movies work. You know, they're still kind of, even though they're action movies, they're kind of sports dramas. So, like, the street fight is both the most preposterous thing to happen in the movie, but also the most interesting thing to happen in the movie.
Yeah, I agree.
And, yeah, it kind of goes back and forth. And, like, apparently, according to what I read, the final fight was choreographed by none other than wrestling legend Terry Funk, which, if you're not into wrestling, that might mean nothing to you. But I am a wrestling fan, so that impresses me. Do you know who Terry Funk is, Craig?
I don't. I was kind of a wrestler. I haven't watched wrestling in a long time. I know I watched it a bunch during that revival in the 2000s with Mankind and
He wasn't
Triple H and all of them. And then I know about like the during the days of Roddy Piper and stuff like that, but not a lot anymore.
Okay, yeah, he wasn't. He didn't make a big impression in WWF. Like he wasn't in WWF a lot. Like he wrestled forever. Like, I mean, it wouldn't surprise, he is what, you know, talking about people who can't retire. He is somebody who wrestled forever and may, for all I know, may still be occasionally wrestling now. You know, he made his debut in 1965. He is now 76 years old and like, yeah, he wrestled just for decades. And he was, in the, you know, the NWA in the 70s, and he did have brief runs in the WWF in the mid 80s and the late 90s. But he's more famous in wrestling for other runs he had in other companies. But anyway, yes. So final fight is choreographed by Terry Funk, and you can kind of see that because there is some wrestling moves in the fight. There is like there is like a backdrop at one stage, and you know, like there's a couple of wrestling moves thrown in there with the just a straight up. Well, you know, I say straight up boxing, but again, as we've discussed, not boxing that you but I suppose it doesn't need to be boxing because it's a street fight. So you know, it can just be like the wailing of punches.
Yeah, they get slammed into garbage bins and
exactly. And it does very much feel like the end of a wrestling feud of like, you know, you've betrayed me, let's settle this in a street fight. Yeah. You know, like,
well, I wonder if it's because that's what they're trying to do as well, of being like, well, wrestling, the same thing with the hip hop, wrestling is getting big and boxing is kind of not as popular right now, so let's make it more like that.
I suppose 1990, I suppose, like, Hulk Hogan's still very popular. Yeah. Maybe that was part of it. But I love how, like, they just won't let this line go. You know, like, so when Rocky finishes the fight, he finally punches out Tommy, like, smashing him against a bus who kindly stops. You know, we get one last kind of, God damn, only in America, you know, like, give him other lines, you know, like, per Richard Gantz.
Yeah. Tommy even gets arrested.
Because that's how that works. If you're in a street fight, the loser gets arrested, but the victor is, you know, it's just congratulated and is taken on the shoulders of the celebrating community. You know,
even if the victor is the one who started the street fight,
it doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter. That's the rules of street fights, but only the loser gets it. If you win the street fight, then that's, you have won and you get the respect for winning the street fight. But for being part of a street fight and losing, you have to serve some time.
Yeah. And then he also, talking about George Washington Duke, repeats the line like 3 or 4 times, touch me and I'll sue.
Correct.
So in case they want to really give that foreshadowing of what's going to happen, they drive that in a bunch because he says it like repeatedly over the span of like 45 seconds of film.
Yeah. Like, and then, so, and the payoff for that is obviously Rocky punches him out, but even that is kind of just weird and slightly hilarious because he punches him in the gut, But yeah. Apparently he punches him up in the gut so hard that it takes him completely off his feet into the air. And then he lands on a car bonnet. And then he, like, he acts as if he's been punched in the face. Like, cause it's like he's knocked out. It's like he's going out. And it's like, you got punched in the gut, mate. I mean, I can see if you're doubled over, like, you know, yeah, punched in the gut's no picnic. But, it just, the reaction to that punch is, and also the fact that it just takes him clean off the ground. And it's also kind of funny because the visual of it, of Richard Gant's actually quite a big guy. And, Sylvester Stallone is, I am 5'8". Sylvester Stallone is only slightly taller than me. He is maybe 5'9", something like that.
I actually saw him during Expendables 3. I was working at the, I was a projectionist with the Chinese theater, and they were doing the premiere there for it. And I saw him and remember thinking, because I'm 5'6", so I'm, you know, a shorter guy, and you know, he's buff, like super buffed, but I was like, oh, he's not that much taller than me at all. I don't know. You always assume Stallone and like a bunch of them are these, like, because they make them these larger than life guys, but
it's the way they're filmed. Like, because like, you know, basically, you know, like I say, I'm not a tall guy. I'm 5'8" and most of them, aren't that big. Like, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme's about my height. Sly's just a little taller than me. Like, you know, somebody like Tom Cruise, I think, is actually shorter than me. You know, like there's loads of them who aren't that big, you know. I think even like Jason Statham's only like 5'10" or something.
Yeah.
Like, somebody like, you know, in the last season we talked about Seagal. Seagal's like quite unusual in the fact that he's like a legit 6'5". And even, you know, like even Arnie's like a bit taller. He's like 6'3" or something. So, but yeah, no, most of them aren't that big at all. Like a lot of them.
Yeah, because, yeah, I know Tom Cruise is my height, or if he, or he's, might be 5'7".
Yeah, I think he's about that. 5'6", 5'7". I know he's slightly shorter than me.
But I know there's the whole bit where he wears, what they talk about, that he'll wear, like, lifts.
Built up shoes. Whatever. Yeah, lifts, aye. But there you go. A little insight into the heights of action this morning. That's what was come to in this episode.
Yeah.
More, I don't know. Should we do a best or worst, or should we just wrap it up now?
Why not? I'll do it. So the best for me, I'll say, because we've kind of talked about repeatedly, is that I think there's a lot of kind of moments, especially early on, that could make for a very solid drama. Like, you know, but it's never comes through like fulfilled, or never like, you know, come to fruition. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of like ideas there that work really well, especially with the head injury and so on. And the street fight's fun. I'll give it that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just this is one where I think the montage is, and just everything about it feels like one long montage going. That's purposeless. Like the montage, normally a montage is supposed to have a training up until something, but this just feels like a series of scenes to get us to the fight, kind of.
Yeah, everything kind of just feels dramatically inert,
like,
throughout the movie, which is very frustrating. I think probably the best thing for me, it ends up being as silly as I like every time I, every time I've watched this movie, which I actually have a few times because I've, you know, rewatched the franchise and been like, yeah, I suppose I gotta catch up on this one too, you know, to make the rewatch complete, I guess. I've watched it a few times over the years, and the street fight for me is like the most entertaining thing that happens in the movie, even though it is also the silliest thing that happens in the movie. The worst thing is partly just the frustration of like what things could be, what this movie could be, or storylines that it could pick up on. But maybe even worse than that is the fact that you get the fight from Rocky IV at the start of the movie, and then you get a slideshow montage of the rest of the franchise at the end of the movie, at the end credits, thus reminding you of the better movies you could be watching, right?
Yeah.
Which is possibly the most upsetting thing, of just being like, oh yeah, remember how good this franchise used to be? But then if this movie didn't exist, then Stallone wouldn't have given us Rocky Balboa, which is actually a fun movie, because like in years to come after this movie, he was like, oh, I can't end it on that note. I'm going to make a new movie. And then, yeah. So maybe if he hadn't made this misstep, he wouldn't have given us Rocky Balboa, which I enjoyed. So like, yeah.
Okay. And Rocky Balboa was kind of, from what I gathered, went on the same themes as like this, but him older, where it's supposed to be like a throwback to the original Rocky.
It's kind of a little bit more character driven. It's kind of a little bit more to do with his relationship with his son and stuff like that, you know, than the big fight, you know. But it's an entertaining movie, and I would recommend all five other movies in this run. Well, of the one I've seen, because I always think of it as being the six movies, and then the Creed movies being kind of a spin-off. And like I say, I've not actually seen the Creed movies, so like when I say the other five movies, that's what I mean. But that's it. That's our thoughts on Rocky V. I hope you've enjoyed listening to our thoughts. Give us your feedback. You know, if you have a different opinion, if you think we've done this movie wrong and you want to be the defender of this movie, I don't know why you would be, but if you do, you know, write into us, tell us your opinions, tell us your thoughts. But that is all for this episode. It just leaves me to thank my co-host Craig for joining me again. I gave him PTSD on the Seagal season. This one's not started that better. So I can only promise that, you know, well, I actually can't promise The Only Way Is Up, Craig, because the next movie we're going to cover is Stop or My Mum Will Shoot. So, I mean, it might get better at some stage, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll give it to Stallone that, you know, there's a certain point in the 90s where it picks up, at least to make an entertaining flick.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, like, I can promise where it gets good. It gets good in episode 3 of this season when we cover Cliffhanger.
Yes.
So you can all look forward to that. I'm looking forward to it. Craig's looking forward to it.
I am.
Hopefully you're looking forward to it, listener. Thanks for joining us for this latest edition of All 90s Action All the Time. Until next time, when we will be talking, as I said, about Stop or My Mum Will Shoot, we will see you.